Welcome to the Friends of McGill Hockey Podcast. This is Ken Tyler bringing you the Captain's Meeting. Today we have the captains of the 2012 CIS Cup. After having won four Queen's Cups in 5 years, they became the first McGill's men hockey team to win the Canadian Championship. We have the captain and scorer of the golden goal, Evan Vossen, now pursuing a professional hockey coaching career in Western Canada. We have assistant captains Marc-André Dorion, playing professional hockey in Europe, and Maxime Langelier-Perron, pursuing an executive career in Australia. It has been 10 years since they won the championship, yet they managed to start the chirping within seconds of our call. They also showed a connectivity amongst themselves that is rare and the mark of a very strong bond. All passionate for their team and their teammates as if they had never left. Fun-loving yet sincere, readily sharing and caring, they do clearly enjoy and care for each other, as well as their other teammates and coaches. Yet you can see the grit and determination that they collectively had for the mission they had back then, as they had set for themselves and for their beloved McGill hockey team to win La Coupe Patate. Welcome, guys, to our Friends of McGill Hockey Captains Meeting. It's been 10 years since the CIS Cup, the first and only one won by McGill. What are the decisions you had to make that said, okay, good, boom, that's it, I'm going to McGill? We'll start with you, Evan.
For myself, I was playing junior A hockey in La Ronge, Saskatchewan, so in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League. And obviously, my 20-year-old year, looking for options. Knew that I wanted to get to go to school, but didn't really know exactly where that entailed. I had sent out a bunch of, I guess at that point in time, it was faxes, I think, in September to Division I schools and all the Canadian universities. And we had a McGill alumni that saw me play in Saskatoon, Mark DeBuscher. And I guess he passed my name along to Martin. And about Christmas time, I guess that ball got rolling. And then as the spring came on, Marty came out and sat down with my family in Swift Current, which I thought was a good gesture. And obviously it made an impact with my family too. And realistically, I had two other schools, you know, McGill and two other schools that I was really interested in that was communicating with. And then after leaving the meeting with Marty, McGill became number one. It was apparent of what it all offered and entailed, not only for hockey, but for education as well. The hard part, I think, at that point was making sure my marks were up to snuff, getting into arts. I believe the story Marty told me was he had to take my transcripts to the Dean of Admissions for arts. And it was almost on like the last day that I could possibly make a decision that it was approved on. So that was kind of it's a bit of a journey, I guess, but really glad that everything worked out and I ended up there.
Good stuff. Well, we've got a long history of players coming from Saskatoon or Saskatchewan. Not a lot of them, but we've got some significant ones. And the first one I had was that I had used as an alumnus was Dick Irwin. And Dick was the fellow who did the recruiting for a guy by the name of Mike Babcock, which all you guys, I'm sure, will know. And without Dick's coming in there and helping out, I don't know if we would have got him. So I'm glad to hear that Mark stepped in when he was out there to do the same.
Yeah, I'll go. I like to talk a little bit, so I'll take over.
Is that true, guys? Is that true?
You got to put him on a timer. He's got to have a limit.
Max, you can get your elbows up anytime.
No, the way I got to McGill, it was also Marty that approached me. Actually, during my 19-year-old season when I was in juniors. So he asked me if I would like to go to McGill. I knew Marty from playing at the under-17 team Quebec at the time. Mm-hmm. So when he approached me, already showed some kind of a sense that he really appreciated me as a player and as a person, and showed their interest right away. But I still wanted to play as a 20-year-old. So I played as a 20-year-old in the major junior. And after that was done, I was not approached by any team in the American League or anything at this time. So I went to a camp actually in the August, but that came later. So I said, yeah, to Marty. I enrolled to McGill, got into engineering. So 2 weeks after camp started, I remember going to that rookie camp in Dallas. And I came back obviously after 2 weeks after the rookie training camp. And I sat in the math class in engineering. It was like 30 degrees in the class. I was sitting at the back of the room because students from the other class came in ours because they preferred our teacher. And I remember taking the notes in English, in math, sitting in the corner of the room. And I got out of there and I thought to myself, I will not be able to make it. So I went to see Marty that day and I told him I can't keep going in engineering. This is going to kill me. This is not going to work. So I looked at other options. I even drove all the way to Saguenay to try to go in that North American League, in the fighting league at the time. Mm-hmm. And drove back. And I remember like my family didn't want me to go there at all. So in the end, we transferred into phys ed. So I learned how to count balls and play with the kids and teach phys ed. So I did my 4 years after at McGill, but that's basically how it worked. So yeah, it started early with knowing Marty and just the way he approached it, a little bit like Evan said, just showing their interest and showing how good of a program it was, really sounded good to my family and sounded good to the values of our family. So that's why I decided to go to McGill.
You still wear that the Dallas t-shirt, or you've actually put that aside? Because I know you wore it for about 10 years in a row.
My dad still wears the Traverse City tournament. He still wears this when he does guarded work and stuff. So we still have that t-shirt. It's a good souvenir to have.
I thought you chose McGill because it was probably the best place that you could make the most amount of money while you were playing.
What's behind that one there, Voss? Tell us a little more about that.
Dora was pretty, let's say, frugal with his money, I guess. And as I know, that's Max is probably real itching to jump in here. Probably is a better way to tell the story. But Dora's also like had horseshoes up his backside just in winning stuff. I mean, what was it? A car? You want a car, right? Hit a hole in one, want a car?
Before going to McGill, started with a car. Yeah.
Yeah. And not like any car, like a Volvo. Wasn't it? Not a cheap one. And then what was the other one? You like were renewing your insurance and you won a free trip or something. Didn't even use the company.
It stuck to you because you still remember that 10-15 years later. Got the car for free.
All I can hear is Max just giving it to you in the background every time something like that happened. And there was quite a few instances.
You can't pay for this. You want a car. You got $6,000 for this. You can pay for this. You can afford this. It was always the same thing, even 4 years later. So
to a bring your own wine or something, and we're bringing your wine.
Exactly. And then he'd be splitting a $13 bill with us. That's how cheap Dor was.
Oh boy,
that was unbelievable. Yeah.
A man who's tight with his money. How about you, Max? How'd you get to McGill?
Yeah, I played, so I think when I was early, like 17, 18, played a year and a bit of major junior. And then I played my last year junior, I played junior A with my younger brother. And I actually, the person who saw me play was Johnny. So Johnny came to see me. And I think I scored a couple of PK goal and he just loved it. And he came down to see me and he said, hey, you know, there's obviously we recruit all these guys that can score goals from the Q, from junior major, but would love you to come and we definitely need role players like you that can step in and really make a difference and kind of leadership position and things like that. So I then met with Marty Ray probably a couple of weeks after, did a tour of the university. At that point in time, I probably was not going to keep playing before I met Marty. I was just going to step away from hockey and go to business schools in Montreal. And that was going to be my plan. And just both my parents have businesses. So I was going to probably take the lead and jump in their business and probably move to a different kind of style of life. But then after I met with Marty, did a tour of McGill, I just felt like I got a bit more hockey in me. I just love the way he spoke about the program, the university, the alumni and things like that. So I decided to give it a shot and come to McGill. I did get in the program as well with Dor and phys ed, but I realized that, you know, phys ed was more about teaching kids rather than just dominating everyone at dodgeball. So I had to step away from that and I moved to the economics program after about 6 months. But it was really about the way Marty Ray presented and communicated the values of the program that really pulled me toward continuing playing, but definitely coming to McGill. It was an amazing journey.
Funny because when Max joined the team, so anyway, I showed up I remember because the veterans were in the main dressing room, and us as rookies, we were dressing up in the other room, like across from the ice.
Okay.
So that's how it was. And then I think after a week or so, I came from being kind of a good player in Major Junior with Vero Paul, with Picard, with a few players that were I names coming into McGill, coming to university. And then there was this guy that was so loud all the time in the dressing room, and he was acting, and he thought he was the biggest thing and the best thing that ever was. And I was like, to the guy, he's like, who's this guy? Like, I've never heard of him. I'd never seen him before. And he was acting like he was really the best player in the room. And then all I know is the next week he shows up and we're the same class. And then I thought to myself, oh my God, now I'm stuck with him too in the school, during my classes, no, me at the ice. But yeah, turned out that that's where we kind of started bonding, Max and I, and we created a good friendship. But at first, I was those kind of people. Those are really the people that I really stay away from usually. But I had to make friends with Max because we were the same program and on the same team. So that's how it all started.
And we had some good chats as well in phys ed. Dor and I used to just try to stick together and try to, you know, we'd play whatever games in some of these classes, and we'd say, all right, let's just go together and beat the other teams. And one of the early times with Dor, I said, he's got to learn to stop trusting. And so I said, I told Dor, we're going to attack these two teams. I let Dor, and then Dor's team attacked the two teams and my team attacked Dor's team. And so I just ended up doing a couple of things like that. And that, I feel like that's how Dor kind of realized that he's got to be a little bit less naive. And we just ended up bonding about these stupid stories and having fun. And it was a really good year, to be honest. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like you did have a lot of fun too, and it sounds like you did do some pretty good bonding, because when I connected with you guys, it was clear that you two had already been in touch, and given the journeys that you've taken post McGill, that's quite a statement with respect to your friendship that you've built up.
Yeah, I think the 4 years at McGill they're so special, because you go to you go to work out together, you go to school together, you have kind of the same routine all the time, the same schedule as all the other 20 guys on the team. So you can really create some really strong bonds. And obviously some guys have been living with other players or like in the apartments or spending a lot of time in the programs together. So I think that's where you really create strong friendships. As that being said, McGill is a program that brings people from really everywhere, not yep. only from North America. Like, some players really come from abroad or whatever. So it's tough to stay in touch with everyone. So at some point, everyone goes on to their own life, and you hear a little bit from the other guy, from someone else, or nowadays with social medias, but it's not easy to stay connected. So when I see guys that have still good friendship with players that were there 10, 15 years ago, I tip my hat to them, because it shows that they care about those people.
Yeah, and it definitely shows the kind of atmosphere and friendships that were developed within the years that they were there too.
Yep.
Yeah. But you guys had something unique, both of you. I don't know, Max, I don't know if you, what your education was when you grew up. Dor, it sounds like it was strictly French. And coming into an English situation, that had to be tough. And Max, I don't know about your situation, if it was the same or not, but tell us a little bit about that and how you managed to adapt, because that's a heck of a challenge.
I actually, my first semester, I sat down with my textbook and then my English-French translation dictionary. And I would just look at the words, underline it, and then put a definition on top of it. And that was the only way I could go through a couple of pages. And it was probably taking me like 30 minutes to go through a page and a half or 2 pages. So it was a struggle to start with, to be very honest.
Good. You didn't open your books too often.
Yeah, that really helped me, actually. That's true. That is correct. I did resell some of my textbooks already still in the wrappers. So that's good.
What'd you say, Evan?
Is it just in perfect condition, hey?
Yes. Yeah. You could say like never use, never open was the condition of my textbooks. But my first year, I actually did attend class my first year. It did go down very, very quickly after that. But yeah, it was a struggle. And I think some of us probably didn't appreciate how difficult it was going to be. It's a big difference to just being able to go out to a counter and order something rather than and actually reading a textbook with some more sophisticated words and things like that. So it was a struggle at the beginning. The first 6 months were tough, but I felt like once I get into the rhythm and comfortable with the way things went, then it was just smoother. But it was tough at the beginning. It was just really trying to understand words per words.
But it must have helped having other guys on the team going through the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. We could definitely relate to each other's situation. And really, I think even the English guys as well, I think really stepped in and understood kind of, hey, it's rough for them. And they were willing, you know, I had a couple of guys, Andrew Wright, were in quite similar classes to me as well. So he was always really willing to help with things. So I'd say definitely the French guys could relate, but the English guys as well were always willing to jump in and help. And whenever there was some sort of studying needed, they were always the ones to jump in and help there. So
same as Max. I have to say, like, the first semester was really, really difficult. I would read a page and then I'd be like, what did I just read now? I had to read it all over again because I would read, but it was just like watching a show, and I'd be like, and don't pay attention. And then you realize you didn't understand anything of what you just read. So I had to read all over a few times. But like Max said, I think for me, it was the first semester that was harder. And then your brain starts getting used to it. Yeah. And then you get into it a little bit more, and then it gets easier every semester. And you understand a little bit also what to pay attention and what is not so necessary. Like, there are some classes that were more difficult, or you have to put more time and effort into it, and some other classes were easier. Also, time management comes and helps after a while, after a few weeks, a few months. But definitely coming to the, as I said, the first year in English in engineering was really, really a tough start. I'm glad I changed. If I had to do it over again, I would probably not even go into engineering or phys ed. I would probably go into economics or something like that. So, but when you're 19, 20, trying to make a choice for the rest of your life, you haven't really had any life experience yet into anything. For me, at least, was all about hockey until I was 20. So it was difficult to make a choice. But
how'd you feel about that, Evan, coming in? I mean, you did have the issue of only speaking Saskatchewanese.
For sure. I think, honestly, probably one of the biggest things that, I mean, maybe a hesitation that I had going to McGill was obviously, like, knowing that probably at that point in time, there was probably, I don't know, 80-85% of the team was probably, you know, Francophones. And stepping into that, not knowing exactly what that looked like, you know, if there was any, you know, division amongst that. But I think probably the part that both Max and Dor touched on was, I think everybody, you know, at the end of the day, it ended up being a family. So everybody helped and chipped in one way or the other. I wish that Simone Marcotte would have taken Max's advice and just opened the French English dictionary instead of tapping me on the shoulder on every bus ride and making me read his textbook to him. So I learned a lot of business stuff that way. But, you know, so I felt like, I was helping him. But there was a lot of instances where, whether it was him or anybody else, when it came to speaking French or having to use that language, where I really had to rely on the guys too. And at the end of the day, and it didn't take me very long, probably within the first week or so, I realized that there was no division. And that was just, I think, the beauty of the culture that had been created there. And something that obviously, as the years went on for myself, and I'm sure for everybody else, you know, we wanted to make sure that stayed the same. And I know that in my fourth year, when I was named captain, that, you know, speaking French was a part that Mike had asked me, Mike Nelson had asked me to at least attempt. And I did. I just didn't have the confidence to really learn. And obviously, you know, looking back at maybe like a program that Erks got to go get into prior to his year, but before he was named captain, you know, where it was intense and it was immersive, probably would have been in the best situation. I mean, it's no secret that my first year at school was a little bit tough education wise. So it was hard for me to kind of try and find that balance. Looking back, it's definitely something that I wish I would have probably got on a little bit earlier. You know, I really respected the guys for you know, the French speaking or French as a first language speaking, you know, to have to write papers and have to do all those things in you know, a language that they weren't comfortable or as comfortable as, and to see them and how hard they had to work, and knowing that they're, you know, translating by dictionary, by word, to get their start, was just, I think, real, just a testament to obviously their work ethic. And I think, you know, that just transferred over into our dressing room too, and just rubbed off on guys.
Yeah. I don't know if Stéphane Fortin was still coaching when you guys were there.
Yeah,
he was. Yeah.
Steph was my project. He barely spoke a word of English when he first came in as our goaltender. He was a stellar playoff goaltender. He's a real gamer, but he really struggled, and he ended up rising to the level of running a school, right? So, and then coaching for 30 odd years. So the commitment that they make to doing what they have to do to get through McGill, acquiring that second language, has done very well for him. I mean, he went back and used both languages, but his coaching by and large was in English. And he'll say too, because you've got a mix on the, and you brought this up, Evan, so it's a good segue. You've got a mix of Anglophone, Francophones coming in and running a hockey program that is a complete mix with somewhat, shall we call it, regional bias more than language bias. But that was something you wanted to be aware of. How did you deal with that? And what were the other things you had to deal with as captains?
I think there was a few things when in terms of my leadership experience, not necessarily with a letter, but the last couple of years was more, I think we had to find a way for everyone to embrace their role. The problem when you have such a good, talented team is to get everyone to bind with one common goal and say, I will play my part for the greater good rather than, you know, complaining about not being on that first power play or second power play. And that was, I think from my perspective, the biggest challenge was to say, we could probably, a lot of us, play on the power play, play on the PK, get all this time, but for the greater good, for the objective of achieving what we're trying to achieve, we need to kind of make sure everyone is happy in playing a specific role in the team, and for that person to be as good as they can in that specific role. And I really think that's where Kelly made a huge difference when he came in, is really grabbing the group and saying, you're going to play this role, you're going to play that role, and you're going to be the best person at that role that there is in the league, not only in our team, in the league. And we're going to push each other to achieve that. Because I think we already had a good group. We had a good group of guys, and everyone was always, you know, really, I think we never had issues with guys not getting along. So it was always quite an easy fit for everyone. But I think really just making sure, and I can for myself as well speak, when Kelly came on board, and I think I had like over a point a game the year before or something like that, and then he told me, you know, you're not going to touch any power play. It was like, what is this about? You know, how am I a point a game guy and I'm not even touching a second of the power play? And it's just how he sold the end goal, the end objective, and what we're going to achieve through that. And that's really how I think the group really meshed. But as a part of the leadership group, it was our responsibility to then sell that back to the players and making sure they understand we're doing this for a specific reason. And it will be a very, very special memories if we achieve what we're trying to achieve here.
The first year that most of us came, because I think we were 8 or 10 guys coming in the year Max and I came in, was a good group of hockey players, really good hockey players that came to McGill that year. And if I can talk to what I think is, we came in and we had a good first year, but I think we all realized that we could compete and compete for a national championship. That was kind of the vibe that was in the room and in the program at this time. And every year we kind of got closer, and we went to national all 4 years, and obviously losing 2010, 2011 in the finals in UNB was really tough to swallow, was really hard on many of us, but we could still come back for fourth year and fifth year for Voss. And that was the goal. That was the main goal. It was not to win the Quebec Conference or to win the Eastern Conference. Like, this was kind of a granted for us. Like, we won 3 of 4 Queen's Cup, and the one we lost, seriously, if it was not played in Western, I think we win that game too, because we were that good. But like back then, and I think university hockey is something special because you don't make money. You don't play for your own ego. Many of us play for, because it's the last few years of hockey. The ones that want to make it professionals after, they know to have to work on themselves, go to the gym, work hard on the ice, have good games, because there's only 28 this season. So all of this made the fact that we grew as a team and we grew as players and as individuals. And like Max said, we all accepted our rules. Like, since I've been playing pro now for 10 years, it's so often that I see guys like, why am I not playing a power play? And the guy's like, I'm making this much and you're making this much and he's playing on my spot and I should be playing there because it's not working. The power play is not working. Our PK is allowing so many goals. And there's a lot more bitching and whining in pro hockey than there is in university hockey. And I think that's what made it so, so special for us as a group. And like Max said, like we many of us had more than 1 point a game on during our second year with Jim. When Kelly came, we all understood that, okay, now we're taking it to the next step. This is what we got to do to win. Yeah. And we all jumped on board and it all worked well. So for us as captains, we didn't have so much to do. It was just to keep that motivation on, I think, every single game. That was about it, because other than that, the guys were working really hard every time we were stepping on the ice.
You went through the three coaches, right? Marty and then Webby and then Kelly.
Pretty much everything that both Max and Dora have said, I would echo. I think with everybody, myself included, right? When Jim was here, everybody, I think, succeeded offensively, probably more so. But when Kelly came in, that my fourth year, their guys' third year, the details part of it, I think, was something that was really emphasized, you know, and that's not taking anything away from Jim or even Martin, but I think it was the vibe, right? Like we'd been to nationals, we kind of like had some of that taste and we realized that the group that was here and was moving forward was real strong. And there was an opportunity, I think, just in the sense of not only our skill level, but I think how tight we were as a group to really kind of make something special from a captain or leadership, you know, standpoint. Honestly, it was pretty easy, right? Like, yeah, sure, the three of us wore letters or whatever, but it wasn't just the three of us. There was so many other guys that contributed and you know, wearing letters were leaders within that room. And obviously that just makes for a ton of success when that happens. And it got to the point where after, you know, realistically, the heartbreak of 2010, 2011 and losing in that championship, you know, we came back and I think we were even amongst ourselves as any returning player. Goal is to get back there and win, but obviously making sure that there was no shortcuts along the way for anybody, you know, and it was an accountability piece for each and every one of us. Like Dora saying, every day, right? Every day it was making sure that we were at our best and guys, you know, weren't slacking or weren't getting off easy. And that was, again, kind of a piece that Kelly instilled a little bit too, right? You knew your role and you knew that if you weren't kind of pulling your weight, that, you know, somebody else that was probably going to get an opportunity, you know, to kind of prove themselves. And I think that at the end of the day, that really was a success piece for us, was one of those areas where we were able to, you know, really hold each other and really grow together, but also be competitive enough each and every day to make ourselves better.
Mm. Max, you're nodding your head. There's something you're agreeing with.
Yeah, I agree with. If you look at the way we were practicing, you'd realize how competitive we were with each other. And not because we wanted to take anyone else's role, but we know if I slack now, I'm not doing myself justice, but I'm also not helping the guy who's going one-on-one in the corner with me. So by pushing ourselves to the limit every single practice, we kind of develop a really an appreciation for each other and try to really accountability, as Evan said, but we end up getting a lot better very quickly at the smaller details and really changing our game from, hey, let's score 11 goals today to let's get ready for that game we're playing with against UNB or that game we're playing with against the top team. And we need to be perfect defensively and score the scrappy goals in front of the net to make the difference. And that's really that mindset that changed, because our second year we were scoring 12 goals here and there. It was crazy, but we had no respect for our defensive zone. It was all about putting points on the board. And Kelly really changed the mentality. Let's be the best when it matters, not when, you know, we know we're going to win the game anyway. And that really, really made a big difference with the program.
And we were talking about rules, but you look at the last game when we won nationals, look at who scored the goals. I think it was Ben Levike, I think, scored one. I think Bignac scored one. And yeah. Voss, I think he scored the game winner. So nothing to take away from these players, but they were not the guys that were scoring like 30 points a season. They were the guys that were scoring maybe 15, 20, 25 points.
Yeah.
So that our depth at this time really helped us in those big games because, yeah, the games against at the time RMC or even at the time Concordia, like they were easier games, but our depth helped us in those moments where it was getting more difficult, where it was crunch time. And the fact that we all worked so hard during the whole season, during those 4 years or 5 years, brought us to a certain level that our four lines could compete against every other line in the league.
The burn that you must have had after 2011, did that change anybody's mind about coming back? Evan, were you planning always to come back for the fifth year?
After my first semester, I was on the five-year plan right from the start. So, so yeah, I was planning to come back. Obviously that fueled it 100%. But yeah, it wasn't. I was early in on the five-year plan.
I think it probably did the opposite. Actually, it probably pushed us to go even further to find a way. You know, what did we do this year that was great, and what can we do even better? I felt like when we lost, it really hurt at the beginning, and it took a while, to be honest, to really accept it, because it felt we were so close, we were so good all year. Where could we have gone? What better could we have done? You know, and we worked hard that year. I remember when Kelly came in and started these practices, I was like, we're not going to survive. Like, we're going to lose half our team after 2 weeks of practicing because it was so intense. It's like one-on-one for 2 hours, guys. And I want you to hurt the other person. So it's like, all right, are we going to survive these practices? So how do we get better? We come back in our fourth year and Voss's fifth year and be better and be that little difference at the end to make sure we can beat the top team, the other top teams. And it just felt like we came back the training camp and it was just like, we got nothing else. This is all all we're thinking about. It's our last year for 9 or 10 of us. How do we make this work? And we'll do anything we need to do to make it happen. It probably fueled the fire more than anything else.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a continuation when you showed up to camp that fourth year. Because we got so far, and then we had this disappointment of the finals against UNB. But that game, we got smacked. Like, we got to the finals, but it was not even close.
4-0.
I think it was 5-1.
No, 4-0. It's on this.
Yeah.
4-0.
4-0. Yeah. So, we were not in the game. And I remember, with 8-10 minutes left in the game, I was like, holy shit, like there's no chance we're coming back in this game. We were not close of this level that we had to be. And then I think all of us took summer training really seriously, and then obviously we knew what to expect with Kelly coming in. So we had that level already, that base already set up from the year before. And then we just kept building through the whole year. And then obviously when we were at Nationals and we won to get our ticket to the final, and then UNB lost against Western, and we were going to the finals against Western. I was on the bus and I remember really well thinking to myself, well, this is it. This is our chance. You know, sometimes in hockey, it's a lot about good timing and having the opportunity and having a good timing. And this was it. And I remember, Western, we beat them already a few times for the Queen's Cup. We played them during the season a few times. And I just thought to myself, okay, that's it. Now we're going to finish this chapter. We're going to turn the page from university hockey on a good note. And then that's what we did the game after, even though it was much closer than I expected. And we put ourselves in a real tough spot at the end of that game.
The 5-minute major, 5 minutes killing a penalty in the third period of a championship game. Oh my goodness. And you did it.
I don't know if you guys remember, I think it was the meeting that we had with the staff. Obviously it would have been Saturday night after we knew who we were playing. But if I recall, Max, you're actually kind of pissed off that we weren't playing UNB. I think there was a little bit of a part in that where I think we wanted some retribution as well, knowing that we had worked so hard for the last year since the previous year, losing in the final. I think to actually pay off. But I also think that, like Dora said, we found out we're going to play Western. It was a team that we'd had some success with, but I also, it wasn't like a air of cockiness or anything like that. There's a little bit of confidence for sure, but we also knew that there was you know, we've been prepping for a year to kind of finish the job, regardless of who we're playing. Even as I think about the preparation in that sense, you know, for that final, it didn't change. It wasn't anything different than any other game that we'd prepped for at any point in time that season. And I think that gave, you know, when you start looking around and seeing guys prep and it's the same way that they have, you know, that it's, you're going to get their best.
The other thing for me is maybe I remember also that year was probably our most difficult playoff run. Because I remember we went to Guelph and I think we had five guys injured or suspended. Frank was suspended or something like that. Oh, probably suspended, actually. And Picard was injured. And I remember we went to Guelph or Ottawa. I can't remember which one it was. And we were really short on key players that would normally make a big difference on the score sheet. And we kind of guys started coming back as we moved along to the third and the Queen's Cup there. But the first few games I remember of that year was really a struggle because we had to go through these teams without a full lineup at all. We had lost a lot of guys. But that kind of set the platform to then get to the Queen's Cup and Nationals, knowing that we can beat these teams, and guys that are normally playing on the third and fourth line can score the big goals. And we knew goals could come from all four lines and from our defensemen as well, except Dor couldn't score goals at all. The shot would not get to the net. But joking aside, I think it really set a good platform to get to Nationals. And we had, as Voss said, it was not cockiness. It was just confidence. We knew we had done everything we could and put the pieces in place to make sure that when it gets to the big game, we would be ready, and that really, obviously, it went quite well. But we did have quite a few challenges in that final game. I think when Voss scored, half of us were half dead and just couldn't move our legs anymore, and we just couldn't be happier. We couldn't play more a single minute extra. I remember with Dano, we were on the PK that 5 minute. I think we spent 4.5 minutes of it, and I turned around to Kelly and I said, "Don't put me on the ice again. I need a break. Like, I need to just breathe."
You two were the two key penalty killers.
That was our role. And then again, it comes back to accepting the role that we had. Yep. And Dano and I loved it. And we were just, how can we actually score goals on the PK while being the top, you know, the top PK in the league? And that's what we embraced it. We loved it. And in my last year, with Dano, he'd get the puck and just flip it, and I'd just fly around. And I think I broke the school record, national record, I can't remember what, in PK by scoring goals. We just knew, hey, let's be the best at this, because we're not going to go into power play. We'll let the power play guys do their job. But when it comes to PK, let's be the best in the league. And that was really something we cherished.
I wouldn't say you would fly by. I would say you would skate by.
You're really playing. You're just getting him back for his goal scoring comment. I can recall that guy. This guy can fly.
He had
on the
to
ice.
Shoot from the hashmark because he couldn't get lower. He had to shoot early.
Hey, 5-0 from the hash marks always worked.
It works.
Hey, Voss fan on the shot technically and scored the golden goal. Hey, we'll take it.
You got to talk to us about that. Let's get to that golden goal, Voss. Come on, tell us. Was that a Patrick Kane 2010 goal, or was that a Evan Voss swoosh?
Well, I would like to say, I don't know if anybody's actually went back and watched the game before. I went back for like the first time probably in like November, maybe. Like last year. So it was almost like 9 years before, 8.5 years, 9 years before. And obviously I remember a few things pretty different. I was watching, I was like, I don't think I was very good this game. But in the third period early on, I had a real similar spot where I came down and I actually ripped a shot, and I hit the goaltender in the collarbone and dropped him. And you know, they took a second, you know, blow the whistle down, that sort of thing. And I was like, okay. So when Pitt gave me the puck on the outside, originally that's where I wanted to go, right? It was short side high, but he was out and he was challenging. Next thing that popped in my mind is I knew Pitt was in the middle. I knew Wrighty was probably driving wide, and all I could hear was, you know, Kelly just grilling it into our head for the last 2 years. It's a far pad shot, right? It's a shot pass. You know, what does that look like? That's what the whole intention was, it managed to sneak its way in. Max is giving me a tough time for my muff shot, but it was actually kind of funny. So the goaltender that I scored on was, I think it was Eunice. You know, he was the one that made the comment about, oh, he muffed his shot and blah, blah, blah after. 2 years later, when I was playing we were in the East Coast then at that time, he was one of the goaltenders, and I'd already been there for a couple of years. He was one of the goaltenders that came into camp, and he came in a little bit later. So he gets into the room and he starts, you know, introducing himself, making his way around the room, and I got a chance to shake his hand and introduce himself. And he was like, you know, I said, I didn't address it then, but I did a little bit later on about, you know, his comment or whatever. And we had a good chuckle about it. I was able to poke some fun, but I mean, it definitely wasn't the hardest shot. Let's put it that way. It was just trying to get on net. It found a way. I'm probably in the same boat as both Max and Dor at that point. I was happy it went in. You know, we'd already lost Hugo Laporte to blocking a shot with his head in the third period. Dor, I believe you'd broke your thumb at that point too, hadn't you? You know, so we were already out prank for the last 7 minutes of the game. Penalty kill the last, you know, that whole point in time, like all those things. And obviously, I think just the relief from obviously our bench for sure, but you know, getting to see some of the alumni after the game and that sort of thing, you know, and their excitement on the ice was something that was pretty special too.
That goal for me, I think I'll remember for the rest of my life. Like this was, as I said, 10 years ago, but I still remember the whole play. I still remember everything that went on with that play. And obviously I've seen it on video a couple of times, so it helps to remember. Like I rimmed the puck from behind, got to ready to pick, and then went in the zone and the two wingers driving and then giving it to Voss, and then Voss scoring the goal, and just like the excitement of all jumping on top of each other. And like, seriously, it was finally over and we had done it. It was also the first time, obviously, for McGill, for such a big program to finally win the national championship. It was good for us, but it was good for the whole program. And that, I think for many of us, it was also kind of a duty to do, because we had gone through 4 years of really good times and really being welcomed so well by everyone over there and being part of that program. So I think it was kind of a giving back also to the university and to the program that it gave us a chance to graduate and go through 4 years of good level of hockey. So yeah, jumping on top of that pile, seriously, I personally couldn't believe it. I was just like, finally, it's done. I can move on from university hockey. I can go on to my professional career because I want to keep playing hockey. And I felt like I really had achieved what I had to do. And it was time to move on to something else, because there was nothing else we could have done more than winning nationals at that time. So yeah,
that
just
was seeing it.
This sequence over and over in my head, it's awesome, really.
Beautiful. Max?
Yeah, it was great. It was honestly, it was accumulation of four very important years of our lives, and five, you know, five for Voss. But a lot of us that were graduating, it was just, and I think it was 9 or 10 of us. It was just, you can't finish better than that. You couldn't ask for more. We worked really hard for it. It was not given to us. We earned it. And it was the group with whom we actually did it was very special. I felt like that last year. We were close the first three, but I feel like we really bonded our last year that we won nationals. It just felt like the group were willing to go to war for each other, willing to take, you know, we're willing to make the difference or to be there for the next person beside us. It was just not your teammate. It was definitely a family, and we had gone through all this together, and now finally we've won the ultimate prize from a Canadian national perspective. It was unbelievable. Yeah, I remember jumping on the whole lot. Probably me and Daniel were a bit heavy for everyone else on the bottom, but we were so excited. And the drinks and meeting with everyone, the alumni after the game, you realize how much it meant for so many people, even outside of the core group of players. It was amazing. It was really amazing.
We've been driving for that. What you guys did, we've been driving for that since about 1979. So.
And that's how it felt. It felt like a lot of people like contributed to what was achieved at that point in time. It was not just 4 years and boom, it appeared. It was so many people before us who contributed to what we were lucky enough to experience at that point in time. And it was, it was a great feeling.
If I can add to that, like, you know, it was Kelly at the time that was the coach, but a lot of us were at McGill because of Marty Raymond that brought us there. Like, he made the recruiting for most of us that were there, that group of 8 to 10 guys that came in. And even the year after, it was still him that recruited the players, because he was not gone from the program at that time yet. So it was also probably very rewarding for him. And for us, we, like, even the alumni league that was playing on the Thursday, like a few of us, like I know Voss did it, I know I did it, like to referee for these guys, they would talk to us all the time about the upcoming weekend, or about the weekend before, how we played or who our opponent was going to be, and if we were ready to play or whatever. That was on Thursday night, and we were going to play on Friday and Sundays most of the time. But yeah, everyone was behind us, and we felt that as a group, and we were the lucky ones to actually win the national championship. But I think a lot of people were working really hard behind the scenes to make this program successful like it was at that time.
Voss?
All those pieces that both Max and Dora touched on, like it was special to see the reaction from everybody else too. And again, obviously Marty's input on that team and getting a chance to chat with Marty after that game. And he had said that at the time he was working with Ottawa, right? So he was telling me that him and Guy Boucher were watching the game, and I think they were in Philadelphia. And when the goal scored, they were celebrating and high-fiving, and they actually got a noise complaint. They had to come up and check on him, which I thought was pretty cool. I think, I mean, at the end of it for me, and I'll be honest, I was worried I was going to go to Nationals for 5 straight years and not win. And not that it would be considered a failure, but it would be, I mean, that would, there's probably not very many people that have had that luxury and not found success. Obviously there was a lot of relief in that too, for myself, and seeing the alumni, not only that were in Fredericton for that game. And we got to, you know, kind of celebrate with the next 2, 3, 4 weeks before kind of the school was out, just the different, you know, events or gatherings that everybody had, or you ran into somebody or saw them. You know, really seeing how widespread the impact of it was, I think is probably the one of the most special parts of that. And I think it also just shows, like, that's one of the things I learned. I'm sure Max and Dora can echo that at being at McGill. The alumni, the people that you meet in that network is real tight-knit. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for us to be able to bring, you know, probably a little bit of a sense of relief, obviously some joy and some happiness to that, I think it was pretty special for us.
Well, you know, all the messages that we had before the game, you know, like on that wall that they all printed the messages, they were coming from everywhere. They were coming from everywhere around the world. And it was, I'm in, I'm watching, you know, like we're doing this. We're trying to, they were trying to raise enough money to give us a chance to have the meals, to give us a chance to be at the hotels and to have all the things in place for us to have success. This support from everyone was really, really big.
That's great stuff. I mean, it warms the heart to hear you honor the legacy of the hockey program. But quite honestly, you guys were the crux of what made the difference. Winning 3 out of 4 and 4 out of 5 Queen's Cups and getting to the national championships and then ultimately winning it in that golden goal. Remnants of not just Kane, but also Crosby's goal too, that quick release. You guys are the legacy. You've built that. For the hockey team to have that kind of a run again would be absolutely fantastic. That you've had a hell of a good impact. And that first championship is the first championship. That is the benchmark that we're all looking at, and you guys are a huge, huge part of that. It's the contribution that you gave that will now be standing up for all the others to be taking a look at. So it's actually quite a delight for me to have the opportunity to talk with you. And I love the humbleness, but also the pride and the confidence that you show and the respect that you show for the program that you actually helped build. You put the star on top of the Christmas tree.
If I can just add to that, we're the lucky ones to be part of this meeting right now, because we had letters on our jerseys. But like Max said and Voss said, we were such a good group of guys and players. So I want to take this opportunity right now to say hello to many of them that I haven't talked in 10 years now since we won Nationals. All these guys really deserve all the credits too. And we were a bunch of guys that were going to war, like Max said, for each other, like blocking shots like crazy. We blocked a ton of shots. Probably have never blocked as many shots as I did in university, even if now it's my job to block shots. Just I want to say hello to the guys and say that this run was special at the time, and it still is right now 10 years later.
Dora hit the nail on the head. Like, we're fortunate that, you know, we did wear letters, but it wasn't just us. There was I think it probably at that point in time there was probably 25 or 26 of us that all contributed in one way, shape, or form, from our goaltending all the way out to ever score goals. So yeah, it was, and I think that's probably the proudest part of that team for me, is that it was a full team effort for us to find that success, and everybody did play a part of it, which obviously had a lot of meaning for a lot of people.
I think that the big difference as well is now every program has got very, very strong. If you look at the teams across mm-hmm. the league, there's probably a lot bit more competitiveness and it's a bit closer than it probably was before when we played for some of the teams. But I think if you look at the program and the structure, and there's still that good, very strong culture, at the end of the day, if they keep doing the right thing day after day, they'll go back to having the opportunities that we had in our years. It's just a question. It's not about doing anything special. Very often it's the work ethic and just be willing to put in the work to then get the output that you want. But I think they'll get back there. I've Both the coaches that I know, I think that they're great people, but also great coaches, great work ethic on both of them. They'll transcend that to the players, and you'll see the program being very successful in the near future. But there's always a bit of a rough patch before you get back to the sunny side, and I think they'll definitely get there. And obviously, I think it's important for the players to know as well, the current players, to understand they have our support. And if ever we can help in any shape or form, we're always happy to jump on a phone call or anything like that and support the best way we can.
For me, it would be really to enjoy the ride, like 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, when, no matter how long you are at university and on the McGill hockey team, really enjoy those years, because they were by far the best years of hockey for me, and the best years of school for me, and the best years of making friends and enjoying those times at McGill. Really, it flies by really, really fast. We keep saying it, we keep hearing it. 4 years go by real fast, but it's the honest truth. And to enjoy those times and really make the best out of it is really what I would say to the players.
Voss?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, being, I guess, outsider is not the right word, but not from Quebec or from Montreal, right? That became my family at that point in time, all throughout the years and with those bonds. So, you know, it was something really simple that a lot of guys probably joked. I know he did, but Simone Marcotte came in every day and he shook everybody's hand. Every day when he walked in the dressing room, he shook somebody's hand, everybody's hand, right? Just asked how it was. And that's just, you know, it was little gestures like that made everybody feel a part of a family. And I think at the end of the day, when you play or value the person that you're sitting next to or sharing a dressing room with as much as, you know, as you do your family, there's a lot of success that'll eventually come from that, even if it isn't right now, you're not seeing it. And I think that's realistically kind of the point where our group got to. You know, like we said, there was 9 or 10 of us that over the course of 4 years became really tight and really enjoyed going to the rink every day and competing with them, but also the time outside of that. And it does fly by fast, but it was a hell of a ride. And honestly, 5 years that I wouldn't change for anything, you know, and completely going out on a limb, never being in Montreal before, never knowing what the hell. I went from 15,000 in Swift Current to 4,000 in LaRange, and then I don't even know what the size of Montreal is. What is it, like 3 million? It was a bit of a shock, but, you know, not once did I feel out of place. And I think that's the bond, and that's the part that I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, obviously with the game of hockey, but it was a real special time and a special 5 years at McGill with that.
Thank you very much, guys. This has been absolutely wonderful listening to you and listening to your stories and listening to the spirit that goes into your words too. How do we do?
I try not to make fun of Dor too much. I know he's sensitive well now. So.
Yeah, well, we won't do the video, Dor, so you're safe there.
that's always the thing too. It's nice. The technology right now gives us a chance to do such things, but it's obviously not the same as being around the table, because it's easier to jump in and say a quick word here and there. Just like at the beginning when you were asking about the name of the cup, like we called it the Coupe des Patates because it was the Cavendish Cup. So like we made fun of the name of the cup, you know, just because. But to me personally, it just brings so many good memories back. Like it's awesome whenever I think of this national championship, but those 4 years, really, there's nothing compared to it. And I keep telling that to everyone that, like, I've been making decent money here in Europe and playing pro hockey now for 10 years. And I'm really lucky to have this chance. But, and a good 4 years, 5 years also made you junior. But those 4 years between 20 and 24 at university were by far my best hockey years. And nothing will top that. I'm sure of that.
I fully agree with you on that. And I've done the same in terms of the careers that I've had, particularly in the coaching part. All the levels that I've coached at, my favorite memories of the years at university, and in particular, my years at university coaching and coaching at McGill. By all means, guys, I really do encourage you. Let's get you guys coming home and appreciate the sentiments that you've expressed on this call. They're fantastic sentiments that you don't get in many experiences in life. And they're wonderful to rekindle when you bring it back. And that will warm everybody's heart. And it will also do oodles, not just for yourself and your family and the kids that you're going to tell your stories to, but it also helped the people recognize the legends who won our first Canadian championship. So thank you.
On that note, I've talked to Patrick a little bit, and I think we're starting to put some stuff together for a 10-year one. I don't know if it's going to end up being around banquet time or if it's going to be kind of separate with that, kind of throwing it around a little bit. So definitely something that I think is important for us and for the school. And I talked to Erks a little bit, and I'm going to try and do as much work out here as I can for some scouting and recruiting stuff. But I think it's also important for, I mean, we look at the banquets that we've been to and recruits and, you know, having them there. You know, to be able to share our side, but also in a sense of what, you know, if there's some potential recruits to hear kind of our side of the story, but be immersed in, you know, a whole team of, and what that look, obviously I think would do wonders for, you know,
absolutely,
you know, in a sense where it sounds like, yeah, I think Erk said they got 19 or 20 first years that are kind of dressing or guys that, you know, were in their first or second year because of last year, you know, might be a good thing, a good opportunity for us to.
I'm in PDH, or you couldn't ask for better people being involved in the program, and couldn't ask for better people coming back in and showing their support, and then also just simply enjoying each other from the memories that you had in your years. So bravo.
What a great trio of captives. They feed off of each other and they inspire one another. I can only imagine what they did for their teammates. And yet, as soon as you mention that, they're quick to refer to their teammates and coaches as the key to their success. With such captains, it's clear that success will come their way in whatever they do, as we well see with what they've pursued since they've left McGill. This is Ken Tyler signing off from the Captains Meeting Podcast, wishing you a happy holiday season and a happy new year. Be sure to keep your elbows up and your stick on the ice.